Dear Dhamma friends, today is the time for our day's Dhamma talk. To start the talk, you may consent with three times, Sādhu, Sādhu, Sādhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතමා ච භික්ඛවේ වේදනා චෛමේ භික්ඛවේ වේදනා චක්කු සම්පස්සජා වේදනා සෝත සම්පස්සජා වේදනා ඝාන සම්පස්සජා වේදනා ජීවහා සම්පස්සජා වේදනා කාය සම්පස්සජා වේදනා මනෝ සම්පස්සජා වේදනා යං උච්චති භික්ඛවේ වේදනාති චී යේ ධම්ම ෆ්‍රෙන්ඩ්ස් ඉන් දිස් රිට්‍රීට් වි හැව් ටේකන් දිස් උපාදාන පරිවර්ත සුත්ත ඒ පර්ටිකියුලර් ඩිස්කෝස් ඩිලිවර්ඩ් බයි ද බුද්ද ඇස් ද මේන් තීම් ෆෝර් අවර් සීරීස් ඔෆ් ධම්ම ටොක්ස් ඇන්ඩ් දිස් පර්ටිකියුලර් This course, what you find in the Sanghita Nikaya, in Kanda Sanghita, basically dealing with the Four Noble Truths, but different perspectives. And the Buddha says, if someone is mastering the Four Noble Truths with respect to each and every aggregates, then each and every aggregates are going to give a total analysis of the problem as well as the way out of the problem, namely the form or materiality or the body as the materiality, the aggregate of forms, and the feelings as an aggregate formation, the perception as an aggregate, the volitional formation as an aggregate, and the very consciousness itself as an aggregate. They are usually never represented in the unit form. It always appears like a agglomeration as an aggregate. That's why it's called skanda or a heap. So whenever the agglomeration going to happen, that whenever it is going to appear as a unit or entity, it's a completely different picture when you cut into small, tiniest part. So, those who have known this analytical power, they take the whole body as a one heap, one entity, one being, one man, one woman, one animal, something like that. Or the mountain or a tower, whatever may be. So if you can cut into individual pieces, go into the tiniest possible, then completely different picture. So the Buddha asks us to understand the Four Noble Truths with respect to this materiality or the form or matter. And for the last 3 days, we try our best to understand according to the teaching of this discourse, and there are more and more you to understand the matter as such. You have to take the agglomeration, the unity as a one entity, and then cut into pieces as much as possible with respect to the sharpness of your mindfulness. So that means you are thin slicing of the time on the time dimension, as well as the space dimension, you cut into as tiny as possible. So, very simple way into get into that is, whenever you are going to take this, for example, the breath as your representative of your formality, form, or materiality, at least cut into the beginning, the middle, and the end. So, this is just the start. So, when you cut into anything into the beginning, the middle, and the end, that very beginning itself has another beginning, the middle, and the end. The middle also have the beginning, the middle, and the end. And the end also have the beginning, the middle, and the end. So, therefore, ultimately, you will see 1001 in-breaths in one in-breath. 1001 outbreaths in one outbreath, there is nothing called a single, it's a series of actions or series of manner. So cutting into that itself is known as Vibhajyavada, the analytical way. So that was somewhat radical at the time of the emergence of the Buddha, because during that time, everyone was happy to accept this as the creation of the this intelligent design and the creation of the omnipotent God. So no one was there cut into pieces. So they considered everything as a unit, and then they thought what is happening is that is what the will of the God, and therefore they were obedient enough to accept as such. But the Buddha, he is coming from the Kingsley family. They are one of the most important weapon is the sword. They cut it. So he is the one analyzed for the first time the body, and more you analyze, the picture is completely different. That is what I try to explain in physics also. Whenever you are taking the molecule and then the atom and into the subatomic particle and the energies, you are completely leading from known to unknown, from complex situation to the very subtle situation. So exactly this happens in the form. So with the help of that background we already laid down, today we are opening the subject of the feelings that with respect to the form, this is known as non-materiality or mentality. And as far as five aggregates are concerned, the materiality consists as one unit, even though it represents four elements. And once you get certain amount of understanding, get certain amount of deductive knowledge and deductive certain amount of direct touch, then you are qualified, as well as you will be naturally leading into this immaterial part, the nama or the mental part. And first and foremost, what you meet in the immateriality is concerned is the feelings. So here the Buddha asking each and every one of us to analyze the feelings as such with respect to the Four Noble Truths, that first and foremost to understand what does it mean by the feelings according to the teaching of the Buddha, or how, or in the sense, feeling, whatever it may be, it is nothing but suffering. Whether you call it as a painful feeling or pleasurable feeling or no pain, no pleasure, it's a kind of a ripples. It's a kind of a agitation in the pool. So therefore, the understanding feeling itself is understanding the truth of suffering. So with that respect, the Buddha is asking, according to the Buddhist nomenclature or definition, what are the feelings? And he says there are six feelings. According to the this discourse, it says the feelings arising in the eye due to the eye contact. The feeling arises in the ear due to the contact at the ear. The feeling arises at the nose, the tongue, the body and the mind. Chakku sampasaja vedana, sota sampasaja vedana, ghana sampasaja vedana, jivha sampasaja vedana, kaya sampasaja vedana and the mano sampasaja vedana. That is the way you find in the Pali. So there is a completely avenue, one channel, whereby you get feelings from seeing or with the help of the faculty of eye. That you see beautiful, ugly and no beauty, no ugly, the medium type. And with respect to the ear, you get good sounds, bad sounds and no good, no bad sounds. Smell-wise also you have all the three types. And the taste buds are concerned, the tasty, not tasty and the medium type. as far as the touch sensation is concerned, the comfortable, uncomfortable and medium. As far as the thoughts and the philosophization and the ideas, likings and disliking concern with the mentality, there is a likings and disliking and in between kind. So all these six, the Buddha recognized itself as truth of suffering. That is a kind of a challenge for the people, those who are thinking in their hedonic line, where the pleasure principle. They are always trying to maximize the pleasure, thinking that is something desirable, that is something away from suffering, or the liberation from suffering. But they are, according to this categorization, even if you are going to see a beautiful scene, even if you are going to hear good music, desirable, and or smell, or taste, or touch, or pet idea, all indicates a kind of suffering. Leaving aside the bad sight, or bad sound, or bad smell, bad taste. So therefore, whatever it may be, arising out of these six faculties, recognized as suffering, truth of suffering. And one being means one of the other faculties are in action as far as he or she is living, specifically as far as one is awakened. But very carefully the Buddha has mentioned Chakku Sampassa Vedana, that whenever the eye contact going to take place, the Vedana going to happen. So this appear like just theoretical presentation, but it explains a very deep reciprocal action. That means you have to understand whenever the eye going to have the contact with the visual object, the mind is fully engaged with the eye. Whenever the mind is fully engaged with the eye, you are deaf. You can't smell. You can't taste. You can't feel any sensation, tactile, or you can't think. So you have to understand, even though we are endowed with, facilitated with six organs, the mind, you work in the unitary way, unique way, it can, in a given thought moment, support only one faculty. So then only the contact as such can take place. So therefore, as far as mind is engaged in seeing, you become a seer. Whenever you are becoming a seer, definitely you become deaf, you can't smell, you can't taste, you can't touch, you can't think. So they are very easily you can say out of six, invariably you have to select one. Selecting once means rejecting five. And that itself is a very novelty one to understand. Unless otherwise you can't thin slice your time, you will think you at a time you are with whole six kind of sensations. And that is why you feel rich, you feel filled, you feel full ego idea. But if you see, it's a just mere fixing up the events, thought moment by thought moment. At a given time, mind cannot be used in two faculties. So therefore, you cannot be in a given time, in a given thought moment, both as a seer and hearer. So that itself is very scientific, if someone to observe it. For example, when you are in walking meditation, we'll say that you are walking in the from here to there, and walking that if you are thoroughly engaged in walking meditation, if the situation is conducive for you, you can feel the touch of the feet, the left leg, the right leg, the left leg, the right leg. And when it is happening, and if you are having a long path, definitely you can see, though the attention is with the touch of the leg, from the heel to the toes of the right leg and the heel to the toes of the left leg, always you feel there are some thoughts in the background. And sometimes you may hear the sounds are also in the background. Or sometimes you may feel the sensation of the other parts of the body, what you are wearing, the clothing, are touching on your this thing, and wind come and give some blowing and kind of thing, they are there. And if you are going to get engaged with that, or going to get discouraged thinking that this thinking is disturbing me, or am I really in the walking meditation, definitely you will see that you are dragged into the thinking. Moment you go into thinking, your right leg, left leg, you are dropping. So therefore, instructions are given, even you feel like there are background thoughts, even if you feel like outside sounds, even you feel other sensation of the body, if your attention of your or your applying thought is assured with the right left leg than the right leg, you can still keep your balance and you can keep on be mindful on the walking meditation. That does not mean there are no sounds. That does not mean there are no sensations of the other body and the thoughts, that you can still keep the track without falling down in the in-breath and in the left and the right. So that means your attention decides, or in a sense a trained mind can decide which one to give the priority. So therefore, the more and more you to practice, you can see amidst of all the sensation, amidst of all the impingements, if you are trained and if you are well prepared, still you can win the game. You can maintain the mindfulness. So that indicates whenever you are going to worry about the background thoughts, whenever you are going to worry about the external sounds, whenever you are going to worry about the other bodily pains, you are rather inviting them. You are rather rejecting the primary object. This happens due to two reasons, maybe. One thing is, when you keep on walking, the primary object becomes very dull. It becomes very pale. It becomes very monotonous. It becomes very boring. So therefore, mind do not entertain by itself, even though the mindfulness is intact with the primary object. So therefore, due to the dullness, it may be happy to change the object. And the other thing is, our mind for time unknown have been trained, or I would rather say untrained, to go for varietal entertainment. So therefore, keeping on one object is happy like a punishment. So therefore, it is jumping one to the other. But in the meditation, you are doing completely the deconstructing of this habit, whereby you keep with the in-breath right leg and the left leg, and there you can see there are many other visitors. They are just tapping on the door. The sounds come and tap on the door, the thoughts coming in on the sounds, but if you know the priority, you are safe. Otherwise, the one or the other will come. That means thinking can come into the mind. Soon the thinking going to take the upper hand, the mindfulness on the right hand leg is dropping. So therefore, by introducing these six sensations, the Buddha says, at a time, only one is working, one donkey at a time. But we do not know, we fail to understand, therefore we think everything is happening at a given time. The one example my teacher specifically when one Jnanananda gave is, it's a very, again and again he mentioned, I think it is easy one to understand if I can quote it. When you go to a cinema and sit in the dark room, not the television, but in the cinema, by paying for the ticket, you get the sounds and the visual object. That's why you are paying. So when you are the show is on, you can see sounds and the music corresponding happening. But you can smell, if you are keen enough, the bigger people are smoking cigarettes and all the kind of, so smells are free of charge. And if you can have a peanut or something like that, you can taste also. That you have to pay. When you are sitting on the chair, that you can feel the touch of the chair also. If the bugs are there, or mosquitoes are there, you can get additional. And in top of that, there is a kind of thinking, am I in the comedy show or the tragedy? The mind also calculating to see the episode by episode, what is the theme of the film. So when that happens, that says that the six senses impingements are completely ready and we are fully in observing. So when you come back from the film hall after 1.5 hours, we feel like throughout we see the picture, throughout we hear the music, throughout we have the smell if you are keen enough, or you throughout we can taste something, throughout we can feel the sitting chair, throughout we can see the theme, or you can calculate it. So that is how you going to criticize the film, or analyze the film, telling this is a tragedy, this is a comedy, the actors are playing good and all the kind. But in reality what happens is, whenever the mind is engaged in seeing, all the five others are dropping. Whenever you are hearing, no seeing, no smelling, no touching, no tasting, no thinking. You never feel it. So simply, if you are a meditator, you can understand in the film, but the sorry and pathetic thing is, if you are going to meditate, you can't see the film. You miss the bus. You will understand how sharp your faculties are changing, so that you are not entertaining whether it is tragedy or comedy. But you can still entertain how the faculties are working. When we are in the physics class, our master asked us to go to the film and see how the beam come and touch on the screen, and there you can see actors are playing black and white or three-dimensional or colored or whatever maybe. But if you look at back towards the beam, you can see in the smokes of the in the smoke, it is conical shape, it is coming from the projector. And you go back to the projector, it is maybe 1 square inch of bright light. And there are also the same movements are there, but you can't discreetly say this is what is happening till that beam go and touch and hit on the silver screen. There are only the manifestation happen. But it is coming from the square inch. And there also movements are there. And when it is coming as a cone, you can see in the smokes, these things are happening, but you can't make it out till the touch happens. And if you go still behind, he wanted to show us the projector. Then he told, before that, you have the celluloid. And the celluloid is the one adding all the movements, one slide or one episode after one episode. And behind the celluloid, there is a can, and it makes sure at a time it flash a white light and then give a darkness. And again give a white light and give a darkness. And that is how one slide come and then a darkness is splashed and then again the bright light come, again the darkness happen, again the bright light happens. So during the darkness only we see the animation of the film. If you are going to see only the white light, then no animation can take place. So, the CAM itself indicate 50% of the time we are in the darkness. But we don't see it. In the film, we don't see 50% of the time we are in the darkness. We see throughout the light. We see throughout, we are seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, and all the kind of things. And ultimately, we think that the director is preparing a film to give us the tragedy or comedy. Ultimately, you are the director. You are the one manifesting and preparing the film. And there are some slides coming, and our mind is preparing it as an animation, and we see, hear, touch, and all the kind of things. But at a time, it is happening only one. So therefore, the feelings are concerned. We are bottom of an ocean of feelings. It's full of feelings. Which one we are feeling at the time is completely independent, completely personal. So therefore, even if you go and see the same phenomena, we different people give different interpretations. That is because our angle is different. According to the angle only, the observation happened. And Vinayananda pointed out, for example, if you are to sit under a tree and meditate in the early morning when the sun is rising, sometimes you can see a dewdrop hanging on the grass, blade of grass, and there you can see the color separation and the rainbow. And the other person is sitting next under the next tree, and if you are entertaining this, you may ask the other person to see through this water drop, dew drop, to see the rainbow. He can't see because his angle is different. When he come up to your seat, he also can see, then you can't see. This is exactly what happens. So seeing angle also changing our sensation or feelings, and we can feel it by seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting, and thinking. So therefore, whenever someone is not specializing, not aware of this kind of a multifaceted way, so we are blindly going seek in search of pleasure or pleasure-seeking game, but ultimately when the analyze and see, that completely depending upon your own mindset rather than the external objects. So then you will understand the worldly knowledge is to adjust the external world, the technology, the infrastructure, the information technology, everything external, thinking that is the one going to give the pleasure. But the Buddha says, all these things are just give the startling, but the final decision is your own mindset, your own preparedness. So therefore, if you can analyze and master your own faculty of feelings or aggregates of feeling or conglomeration of feeling, you will come to know if the mind is beautiful, the world is beautiful. If the mind is ugly, world is ugly. So last time also I remember I cited one example. There had been one Zen master. It's a very tough and very stern. And one disciple came to practice under him. But he found very difficult because master is very strict and tough. One day, instead of in their sitting meditation, he skipped the sitting meditation and went up the mountain and just see the sunset. And he found very panoramic view, very colorful, and he was imbibed in observing different color patterns and the things happening. It's completely natural. He was so happy. So when he come back to the monastery, it is almost night, but he can't help but tell the master, "Oh master, today it's the best day of me because I see the sunset. It was so beautiful. And the master immediately came and slapped upon his face and told, your mind is more beautiful. That is why you can see such a beautiful thing. So that is why the Buddha says, mind your own business. Instead of preparing the external world and expecting this and that for the continuity of the comfort, if you can understand how the mind is working specifically towards the sensation, it is much, much, much appreciating and apprehending how, what a wonderful machine we are operating without having the handbook. We are pressing here and there the buttons. It accordingly gives certain amount of changes, but never we master it. So whenever the Western psychology, specifically the Sigmund Freud, wanted to have the salvation from suffering, he came out with the idea of this psychoanalysis. Ultimately, he end up with the dilemma telling, what is the natural end of psychoanalysis? Is there any natural end? Is it terminable or interminable? To his career, last he mentioned was interminable, because the analysis itself is not possible, leaving aside the answer. So his ultimate, he told, maximum what I can do is, I can change this historical misery into day-to-day unhappiness. That's all. But the Buddha, so before that, the Sigmund Freud had no any idealistic, healthy mind. He can't fix it out. He can't think about, and even the medical science can't think about the ideal healthy body. That you can't figure it out according to the Western way of analyzing. So recently, they went on research or a dialogue or a discussion on the destructive emotions, specifically after the attack on the world by the World Trade Center, with the suggestion of the His Holiness Dalai Lama, and all the best scientists came under one roof to discuss the destructive emotions, and they accepted. So far, they have analyzed so much of patients which have so much of psychological problems, but they never found, they never thought about the ideal mind. Healthy mind is never thought about in the Western way. So instead, what the Dalai Lama suggested was, take a Lama who has practiced so much of hours, and they put into the MRI, fMRI, and they found completely different graphic explanation how their brain is working. For the first time, the scientist was astonished to see what is the healthy mind. This is also not the exactly the healthy mind, but the Eastern people can think about what does it mean by the healthy mind. West never thought, because their machines and the doctors and the philosophies completely depend on the sick mentality and sick body. But the Buddha, in his analysis, he gave completely description as to this very body itself is a misery. This feeling itself is a misery. The perception itself is a misery. The mental formation itself is a misery. Mind itself is a misery. So if we want to annihilate, or if we want to emancipate from that, then he came out with the bold answer that the Arhant is the ideal situation whereby one can understand what is the healthy mind and what is the healthy body is. But West is still find difficult to figure it out according to their terminology. In that sense, the Vedana, the feelings, have a very dramatic change. In the sense, we can say the approach to the Vedana from the Eastern point of view and the Western point of view are still find very difficult to merge each other. But in a sense, we are lucky because now these two are coming each other little by little. There's a very limited number of people trying to bridge them each other. And in that sense, the analysis of the Buddha towards the Vedana is very radical. It is going to give a comprehensive analysis and the complete answer. And the thing is, for the Western thinkers or Western kind of thinking people, it appears like a mystics. But the Westerners, lucky enough, they went further as much as possible to analyze the human misery in terms of the physical and mental the disturbances or diseases. So therefore, when you are reading, you can understand how difficult, how much would have been the understanding of the Buddha to give complete analysis as far as this four aggregates are concerned. So therefore, first and foremost, one has to understand is there are six kind of feelings or six bases. All these bases alternatively changing according to the time series, unless otherwise you are very sharp, you will think all are happening at a time. If that is the case, definitely your observation is wrong, your inference is wrong. So that is why the Buddha says, to start your meditation, to start your mindfulness, close at least five faculties and pay the attention for only one. That is why when we are sitting in meditation, you are being asked to close your eyes and asked to go to a silent place and asked to not to entertain smelling and talking or eating. Just let the body to be without any volitional action and just pay attention. They are only the best way you can develop the mindfulness. But when it is mindfulness is continuing, when the mindfulness is becoming hard and fast or steadfast, definitely the bodily feelings are going to happen. You can't do away with that. So therefore, whenever the feelings happen, you have to take them as raw materials for your experimentation rather than hating them or rather than try to avoid them. So therefore, whenever someone needs to deal with feelings, they have to get a kind of a distance. Otherwise, very difficult to understand feelings. In our circles, I remember in Nilambe, they used to say when the surgeon is operating a patient, they have to get the clinical distance from the patient. If the surgeon is going to understand the patient's difficulties or pain, they will get emotionally connected. They will lose their professional skills. So they have to get the clinical distance. Exactly the way when you are practicing meditation, slowly, you have to get a distance from the pain. So in order to get that, you must have a certain amount of mindfulness already developed on the materiality, then only be aware of the complete action or the way the feelings are working. So if you are not getting if you can't get a distance from that, that means you are so engaged in the sensuous pleasure. So that is how you are breaking your precepts. You will be carried into the, taken into the physical misdeeds, verbal misdeeds. Ultimately, you will do things not becoming. It is unbecoming. So therefore, those who have no that kind of moral integrity, moral responsibilities, they find very difficult to develop the mindfulness and nothing to talk about the benefits of mindfulness. So those who are entertaining or those who are spending their whole life for the sensuous pleasure is considered as mad. Sabbe putu jana ummataka. The Buddha says, all the sensuous beings are deranged. Because they are so blindfolded in maximizing, in order to maximize their sensuous pleasure, they will do anything. And they say that in the war, as well as in the love-making, anything valid. There is no senses of judgment. So therefore, first and foremost, one has to understand, the sensuous pleasure or pleasure-seeking game is always making people sick. Or they are naturally become sick if they spend their whole life in order to maximize their sensuous pleasure. My Burmese master, he always cite an example. He says, if you happen to keep a honey bowl open, specifically in countries, tropical countries, so much of ants, they get the telepathic message. There's a huge honey bowl open and they come swarming. When they come, they start to sip as much as possible because it is a rare opportunity for an ant to have such a big honey bowl. So when they are drinking, little by little, what happens is their head is down, the back is up, they become slowly, slowly heavy. They slowly, slowly go into, slip into the very honey. But even then, they consider it, I am slipping down, but where? It is a honey bowl. So it's still they are keep on drinking. Ultimately, their first two legs will get stick into the honey. But still, they will rationalize thinking, I have four more legs, nothing to worry, I can go back. So go for further and further. And when they go for the second legs also, ultimately, they slip into the very ambrosia, it will become a death trap. And when that happens, even if a noble person come and try to rescue it, they can't do it. By the time 1,001 other ants also fall into the same fate, if you are going to try to take someone, 10 will sink in. So therefore, even a noble friend, a benevolent person can't help. This is exactly what happened in the sensuous pleasure. Because the deranged people, the Ummataka people, they fail to understand the justifiable sensuous pleasure and unjustifiable sensuous pleasure. Whenever they are transgressing, they make a bias kind of a decision. Always they justify. Even though they transgress the level, they justify thinking, never mind, once in a way I am going to do it. Today I am going little transgressing. Never mind, you are justifying yourself. Ultimately you end up with such an agony. The today's the AIDS and the smoking and the high blood pressure, all these things are either iatrogenic effect or too much of indulgence with the food or sensuous pleasure, whatever may be. So it has become an epidemic. Even the whole civilization come into together and try to eradicate it, impossible. And during the uncivilized, so-called uncivilized stage, there were no such cases. Because the scarcity was the problem. Now it is not the case. Now it is abundance. So people do not know their limits. What is the healthy and what is the unhealthy. So under such circumstances, giving such sensuous pleasure is the best punishment. They misuse it. And no one tell them that they have to have a certain amount of restrainment regarding the faculties are concerned. So it appears like unscientific. I don't know whether it is a racket of these multinational companies or the mere desire of individual person. But whatever may be, the Buddha very cautiously he mentioned that if you do not restrain yourself, that you are the very one disturbing yourself. And there's one book written in Sri Lanka that committing suicide by your tongue. It's a slow process. If you can't control your tongue, you are committing suicide. Slowly, slowly. Because whatever even the food is wrong, you can't help but eating. The obesity or diabetics or all the kind of things. So therefore, the Western science still take time to understand this moral ethics or morality. They take the only the secular ethics. They never think about this kind of morality. They think this is unwanted restriction, unwanted self-mortification. Why not? So therefore, as far as you can't understand the flaws or disadvantages of the materialistic pleasure, you are a person deranged, ummataka. So therefore it's called is human, or neurotic. To be neurotic is human. Each and every person has this neurotic imbalance. So that is why the Buddha says sabbhi putu jana ummataka, and therefore no government or no religious leader can give a common prescription for people to restrain themselves from the sense pleasure, because it appears like interfering in their own personal psychology, appears like commandments. But out of compassion, Buddha presented, this is the way you have to understand the materialistic pleasure. And as far as you are in this materialistic pressure, not only you are disturbing your physical health, not only you are disturbing the mental health, you are preventing yourself from this immaterial pleasure. Because those who are really engaged in this materialistic pleasure, they never think about meditation, they never think about the good side of the concentration or mindfulness, because they don't have enough time. So much of appointments, ultimately each and every appointment is leading to disappointments. Never mind, they find very difficult to find allocate time for this kind of a meditation. And in the meditation, what you do is you close your faculties. As I mentioned, the ears, the eyes, the nose, the tongues, and no volitional activity, you just observe the breath or the body. And that is how you are going to develop the mindfulness. So that is completely going against with the people, those who are busy in sensuous pleasure. And not only that, even if you have time for this concentration type meditation or serenity type meditation, each and everyone can't get a substantial amount of concentration or substantial amount of mindfulness. So whenever the concentration is going to happen, the Buddha, he prescribed it as the concentration is the way to the immaterial pleasure. The kind of happiness you are going to get in this concentration is not due to visual objects, not due to sounds, not due to smells, not due to tastes, not due to the comforts, or not due to any philosophical ideas. It is due to absence of them. No sounds, no taste, no vision, no smelling, no touching, no thinking. So it is therefore called immaterial pleasure. So whenever the meditator going to get this kind of immaterial pleasure, some people get out of their own contemplation on their bodily parts, or sometimes with the breath, or sometimes with their sitting posture. Maybe other objects also. For example, a person is going to take the bodily posture or the breathing as such as an object of meditation, and when they become successful, they are bound to get this immaterial pleasure. So when the immaterial pleasure happens, definitely a person who can earn it will put it in a higher valuation than the materialistic pleasure. The materialistic pleasure has so much of flaws, so much of disadvantages, with compared to that, the immaterial pleasure has nothing to pay something. Even the government can't tax you upon that. This government is taxing anything on the immaterial pleasure. They are masters. Any material pleasure you are going to get, they get their portion. That when you are going to the immaterial pleasure, government can't tax you. And it is coming out of no money necessary and not necessary to go somewhere, you can have it. But even then, according to the teaching of the Buddha, this immaterial pleasure itself, one has to see not the lasting one, not the end result. So instead the Buddha came out with avedaita sukha. No, there's a kind of a pleasure unperceivable. So this appear like irrational. If something unperceivable, how can it be a pleasure? So that is why when the Sariputta was explaining it to the monks, he told there are three kinds of pleasures: material pleasure, immaterial pleasure, and pleasure which is unperceivable. Then one monk asked that Panti, if it is unperceivable, how can you categorize it as a pleasure? So Venerable Sariputta told, whatever may be perceivable is suffering. So therefore, unperceivable thing is the one lasting, not subject to any changes. So that is why Buddha is verily recognized this as the lasting pleasure or the Nibbana. So in the meditation, we can come up to that, or we can experience with our direct touch. And if you perceive in a correct way, you can understand this avedaita sukha. For example, say that when you are meditating, we are going to get the breathing very subtle and going to get the beautiful breathing. Breathing becomes very, very calm and quiet, and there your attachment to this pleasure is invariable. And whenever the bodily pain is going to happen, you hate it, considering it as enemy. But in the Chula Vedala Sutta, often I am quoting, and they are the Vikuni Dhammadina, that means an Arahant nun is being questioned by her ex-husband, also a monk. He has come up to the Anagami level, that the third fruition, but the nun is fully-fledged Arahant. The Visakha, the ex-husband, is asking, that is interrogation, cross-questioning. Dear sister, what is the pain and pleasure of the painful feeling, pleasurable feeling? That be like a quite irrational question, but it has a depth. That is why the husband is asking, what is the pain and pleasure of the pleasurable feeling? And then the sister Dhammadina is telling, oh dear Visakha, that whenever the pleasurable feeling arising, it is pleasurable. When it is disappearing, it is painful. But you can't see these two facets because you have the underlying tendency of desire for the desirable feeling. So therefore, you fail to see the disadvantage of the pleasurable feeling. That means when the pleasurable feeling is disappearing, it is pain. But you never see it, because you are bewildered. You are taken away by this undercurrent. So therefore, if you can manage to see, whenever the pleasurable feeling happens, there's a kind of magnetic desirability. If you can observe it, you will see the beginning of the pleasurable feeling is good, middle also good, the end is suffering. And then the Upasaka, Visakha, is asking your dear sister, what's the pain and pressure of the painful feeling? Then verily the sister Dhammadina is telling, oh dear Visakha, when the painful feeling is, when it is appearing, it is painful, when it is disappearing, it is pleasure. But you can't see it because your mind is always hating, the underlying tendency of hatred is bewildering you, coloring your mind. Therefore, whenever the painful feeling happens, you develop unhappiness. So therefore, you can't see, you can't perceive its disappearance, and the disappearance is the pleasure. I think this is quite rationally. One can understand it, the deductive knowledge, but the point is not that. The Visakha Upasaka, Visakha is asking the Sister Dhammadina, what the pain and pleasure of no pain, no pleasure situation? This is very, very tricky. Because most of the people even do not know that there is a no pain, no pleasure situation. Adukha Masukha. But Sister Dhammadina is very clearly says, whenever the no pain, no pleasure situation happens, if you know it, it is a pleasure. If you do not know, it's a pain. The underlying tendency is the ignorance. So that is what happens in between the in-breath and out-breath. There's a gap. Gap you can't feel. It is not no touch, you can feel it because your mindfulness is not so sharp enough. So it is always a black box. It's always a dark hole. So whenever the breath is going to happen, in-breath to out-breath, out-breath to in-breath, at the beginning you see the gross area. So the Buddha says, in order to familiarize yourself, to bring your attention, bring your sharpness to the lower layers or very sharp layers of the sensitivity, see the beginning of the in-breath. See the beginning of the out-breath. More and more you go to the beginning part, you go somewhere the unperceivability to the perceivability range. And that is also changing according to the sharpness of the mindfulness. And more you go there, you find between the in-breath and out-breath, always there's a gap unperceivable. From the out-breath to in-breath, there's always a gap unperceivable. Whenever that happens, mind becomes bewildered. Mind feels like slipping off. So, but if you train yourself to see the beginning of the in-breath and the beginning of the out-breath, and ultimately you will see the end of the in-breath and the end of the out-breath also, that is what we call seeing the breath from the beginning, the middle, to the end. Ultimately, whenever you become mature enough, the total process of in-breath and out-breath becomes subtle and subtle. When it becomes subtler, the feeling that you are going to get is more towards the no pain, no pleasure. So there itself, your mind becomes completely incomprehensible and mind becomes bewildered and agitated as to what is going to happen. Am I really with the breath or am I sleeping? Or am I unmindful? Am I unconcentrated? So therefore, your untrained mind is questioning your own meditative results. But therefore, you have to go prepared with your so much of trial and error. Then only you can go to the deepest layer, whereby we can say subtlest point of the breath, where you not sleepy, if you can manage your mindfulness in the very alert way, vigilant way, diligent way, you can feel the sleep, not sleeping. And you are not unconscious also. You are not dead also. There's a kind of a feeling you can't put into words. Because our language can't comprehend it. Rational mind is nowhere. So whenever you go there, if you are not questioning it, and instead try to familiarize it, instead going to season it, you can understand that what does it mean by no pain, no pleasure. But there are so much of ignorance, that is why we feel sweating. We feel shaky. We feel nauseating. We feel lost. We feel fearful. Sometimes boring. So all these indicate our ignorance is now manifesting as a negative interpretations. So daily when your meditation is become successful, you go to a sphere whereby no pain, no pleasure happen, without familiarization, without direct touch to it, you cannot experience it by listening to Dhamma talks. You can't explain, you can't experience it by reading good books. You can't experience it by grace of the teacher. You can't experience it by wish. Even if you are experiencing, if your views are not correct, if you do not have this foresight, definitely you will miss the bus. Instead, what you would do is, you will say that I am being asked, supposed to be with the breath, I am being asked to be with the breath, but breath is not there. Instead, body becomes shaky. The mind becomes the unsteady, fearful, boring, monotonous. You feel like opening your eyes, or you feel like entertaining doubt, or sometimes you fall into sleep. So these things are not your own personal mistakes. These are the manifestation of your very ignorance. So you have to quantify them. It will manifest rather in a very dramatic way whenever the breath becomes very subtle. So daily you must facilitate in order to go into the very subtle layers whereby you will exceed the pleasure and the pain and you will go to the subtlest form. And that is also when you go there and thrive upon that, season upon that, there's a different kind of equilibrium that is sometimes feel like not belongs to this world, not belong to this sensuous world. But it is human beings can go up to that. So therefore the Buddha says, you are being meritorious and the people with endowment. But even then if you can't go and touch that point, and if you are going to live the whole life for this sensuous pleasure, what is the difference between the animal and a human being? Because the animals are also experiencing that. So your human capacity is to understand the sensuous pleasure is necessary. They should have certain amount of visual objects, sounds, smells, tastes, touch and thinking. But if you are going to live the whole life in order to that, definitely you are not going to even experience or experiment even toward the no pain, no pleasure. Even if you have time, even if you experiment and go there, if you have no correct perspective, no correct view, still you will not appreciate it. So therefore, so much of variables has to come align with, and when you come there, you will, your meditation also give the situation. One day you will appreciate that whenever there is no such a perceivable in-breath and out-breath, sometimes perceivable body, but definitely you are sure you are mindful, you are sure you are concentrated, you are sure you are not sleepy, you are sure you are not dead. And that is the point you come to know the least frictional path, and your whole machine is now in autopilot. And no volitional involvement, you can't explain it either by the pain or the pleasure, you can't explain in terms of the in-breath and out-breath, no perception, therefore you can't communicate with someone, then not necessary to have any manipulation. So this is one point where we can assimilate or have a foresight or rehearsal what it will be like the Nibbana. So therefore, as far as the feelings are concerned, as far as you are in either pleasure or pain, you are deranged. That is not the middle path. So you have to go through them and come back to the middle, whereby one day you will understand everything happened in the complete harmony, complete smoothness, the breath also very subtle, but you are not adding any doubts, any violation, any agitation. You season yourself. You can live sometimes 1 hour, 1.5 hours, that so much of healing in the body and the mind happens. So this is the point, only point, if at all the body to heal itself. If at all the body, mind to heal itself, but that is not the Nibbana per se. This is a kind of a doorway opening in terms of pain and pleasure, or feelings are concerned. So therefore, the Dhammadinna's discussion in the Chullavedala Sutta is really an eye-opener for the real insight meditators whenever the feelings going to cease to exist or going to the subtlety, one has to really promote it, even though it is going against your likings and disliking. And ultimately you will come to know that is the middle path. For that, the correct viewpoint must be there. Correct thought must be there. Correct amount of energy, that means not to violate and disturb this situation by opening your eyes or forced breathing or entertaining doubts. You have to facilitate it. And even in the day-to-day activities, you must understand whatever the violation you are going to give to the society, you are going to get the repercussion. So more and more you are talking, more and more you are accumulating demerits. More and more you are working, you become busy boy, again you are making unwantedly. So in the day-to-day activities also you have to take care about the moderate talking and moderate working and the energy, then only your livelihood will come into the middle path. And you will understand when the meditation come up to that level, you come rather let the meditation to take its own momentum rather than your forking fingers. So energy aspect is becoming more and more wisdom biased rather than exerting more energy. And then the mindfulness come to know the synchronizing effect, the balancing, how to maintain not to fall into sleep and not to entertain doubts. Not to do forced breathing, not to agitate yourself, and then the wisdom going to take place. I mean, the Four Noble Truth is going to take place. So therefore, this is going against the grain kind of training. For example, in the olden days, we used to have clocks with the pendulum. And when you observe in the pendulum, you can see it is go to one extreme end as if it is going to stop like. There's a kind of a changeover and then again swing back. And then go to the other end, there it is going to, as if going to stop like. So you are waiting and see, there are more stable point appear like in the both the extremes, because this is the point the pendulum going to be almost slowing down, but again dropping. How much you can observe, you will conclude, these are the most stable point and the middle is the most fastest point. It is shifting this way and that way. But when the pendulum is without winding, it is going to stop. It is never stop at the ends. It is stop at the middle, which was the fastest moment when it was in the function. Exactly the mind, if you are going to stop it at the pleasure, it's one extreme. It never happened. Equally, you can't stop at the pain also. If it is going to get the rest or harmony, only it is happening at the no pain, no pleasure. But for the hedonic people, those who are in the pleasure-seeking game, never think about, never comprehend the no pain, no pleasure as a gateway. Leave aside all the sensuous beings, but even the meditators, very difficult to convince them, don't go in search of even the immaterial pleasure. Don't worry about even the enunciated kind of suffering. So these two are two extremes when the pendulum is going. One day it is going to stop at the no pain, no pleasure situation. When that happens, very appreciation, understanding this as the middle is the most important. In the Majjhe Sutta, the Buddha says, pain is one extreme, pleasure is one extreme. The way out of suffering is no pain, no pleasure. So therefore, you have to understand all the three combinations, but usual mind is only completed the picture with the pain and the pleasure. But the meditative mind can expose into that, but even with appreciation of no pain, no pleasure is very difficult. Then only you can understand why the Buddha came out and say three kinds of the feelings, the materialistic kind, and the non-material kind, and unperceivable kind. Unperceivable kind is the one, avedita sukha, and that is the point you never appreciate, never crave for any pleasure. So therefore you are not hitting with the pain. Ultimately you come and rest in the middle. Usually the middle, no pain, no pleasure, never go to our memory. Our memory record only the pain and the pleasure. Whenever the no pain, no pleasure happen, the memory goes blank. That is why sometimes in the meditation you get all of a sudden jerks, an awakening like thing. That is the point just before that you have been in the no pain, no pleasure. So mind read it as a slip or like a black box or like a dark hole. So this is a very good sign that my meditation is now leading to some kind of subtlety. So there are normal mindfulness is not enough. You have to double fold the mindfulness. Mindfulness is steadfast as to see how our perceivability drops into unperceivable levels. And again, how it gains into the perceivable level with a shock. So more and more you practice, you will understand each and every breath have this gap. And when the Krishnamurti is going to give his speeches, he says, between two thoughts, this gap is there. Between two feelings, this gap is there. Between two perceptions, this gap is there. Between two volitions, this gap is there. But you are always by overlooking, missing the gap. We are jumping from one to the other. So that is the function of the desire. Desire hooking up each other from the peaks. Never allow the minds to go to the valley and see the middle part. So therefore, choiceless awareness has a big meaning over there. Whether the painful pleasure feeling happens, you must be aware. When the pleasurable feeling happens, be aware. And if you can keep the counts to isolate your painful feeling and pleasurable feeling in a day, I will challenge you, you can't account for even 10% of your time. 90% of your time you are in no pain, no pleasure. But you never recognize, instead what you do is, you will say you are boring feeling, therefore you will go for video film or television. Look at the paper. Go for an hour or plan for a picnic. Whatever may be, whenever the no pain, no pleasure happens, you feel like isolated. You feel like alienated. You feel like filling it with some other hobbies. And if there is no hobby available at your hand stretch, you will say, I am a poor person. If I am to be rich, I must have all the facilities. Whenever I feel boring, I can go and all the kind of things. Ultimately, what you do is, you are completely distorting this no pain, no pleasure, and ultimately you come out and say, my mind is full of depression. My mind is full of anxiety. My mind is all full of neurotic feelings, because you never allow the mind to settle in the no pain, no pleasure. So it is no pain, no pleasure is nothing related with your meditation. It's an endowment of the human mind, but we are so paralyzed. We are running, chasing behind the pleasure. So therefore, ultimately ending up with the pain. Leaving aside even that, we are failing to understand no pain, no pleasure. So therefore, we are spoiling the very the time, very endowment we are going to get. In that sense, the children are better off. They have no feeling about the pleasure-seeking game. And therefore, most of the time, they are with themselves contented and introvert. So therefore, by looking at children, we release our tension. We feel relaxed. So therefore, meditation is just give the way, doorway opening to see at least three kinds of feelings Even though we give the higher value for the painful, pleasurable one, with respect to that you have the pain, but if you are accounting for your pains and the pleasure, you will understand most of the time you have no pain, no pleasure. So the day you appreciate it, the day you going to dwell upon the no pain, no pleasure situation, you see more and more you confine to yourself, more and more you confine to internal, that it is the least amount of mistakes you are doing, sabba pava sakarna, least amount of harm you are doing, and you are letting the mind and the body to heal as much as possible. So therefore, understanding of the Vedana or the feeling is known as the total knowledge on the humanity. Before the Buddha, the whole knowledge is known as Veda. Veda means the knowledge. Buddha was mentioned the total understanding as Pativeda. Pativeda means understanding the feeling body. Whenever you are going to understand the feeling body, don't discriminate the fear, good feeling, don't discriminate the bad feeling, and then only you can understand no pain, no pleasure kind of feeling, and that time you will see we are all the same. Humanity as such is all the same. Whenever we are going to do with the biased idea of pleasure seeking only, we are fighting each other, we are envious each other, we are killing each other, because the moment you are going to understand the no pain, no pleasure, there is nothing to rob, nothing to drag from the others. It is already enough. So therefore, more and more you become mature in the meditation, you understand that just being a human itself is a blessing. But you have to be human. Not like animals chasing behind the pleasurable feeling, just like running behind the carrot, then only this problem happens. So therefore, we are already now in this so-called culture, so-called civilization, where it is sick, is paralyzed, it is biased towards the hedonic feelings. So we have to understand that gravity of that, and the way out is we have to assimilate ourselves, so not only from the through the form, even through the feelings, we can have another gateway opening, and that gateway opening is, I am repeating, it is not a result of meditation. It is just keeping the good account, good bookkeeping. There you will understand, we are already endowed with that. For to have that bookkeeping, you must have steadfast mindfulness. So steadfast mindfulness is giving opening from the materiality, feelings, perception, all the kind of thing. So today's talk I dedicated for this feeling, and with the time we will go for the other immaterial parts also, but don't forget whatever the serious subtle thing we are going to talk in future, most important thing is mindfulness on the materiality, the form, the corporeality. So I have to again and again refer back to that. Through that only we can go to the deep layers in time to come. So I think enough for the day. Thank you very much for listening. We have taken, I think, almost 1.5 hours. So I would like to ask if you have any questions or any kind of statements or any criticism or any remarks. We can take little time for the discussion.
What is understood as bliss or ecstasy? Is that the same as pleasure? Is a heightened form of pleasure or more desirable spiritual, let's say, form of pleasure? bliss or ecstasies?
So it depends on the definition that you are going to give. I think there's a drug now called ecstasy.
What?
There's a drug.
Yeah.
So that is also an ecstasy.
Yeah.
I mean that you forget about yourself and let the feelings to come, what we call trip or ecstasy. So therefore the way of the Buddha explain is, as far as your feelings are confined to so-called ego, one internal-external difference, that means you are in a prison. One day you have to dissolve that. No internal-external difference, at least in the feelings wise, that you are go unboundary. That's called unboundary. So whenever it happens only, you can understand there's nothing to maintain. They are maintained by nature, why should you worry? Then once their boundaries are gone, whether things are impermanent, whether things are changing, nothing to worry because this is the nature. When you are selecting, this is me, and when that particular part is going to undergo some changes, you are definitely worrying about thinking, I have to maintain, I can't control it, it is not governable. That is one. When the other boundaries are dissolved off, then you can have kind of a catharsis, kind of a ecstasy, that you are just entertaining without any maintenance cost. When the Ken Wilber is explaining the book, that's one very nice book known as No Boundary. He says that whenever the line is straightened, it is leading to infinitum. But whenever the line is becoming a curvy, according to the curve, there is a point. And then whenever it is curvy, the relationship between the point and this is also going on, therefore it is rotating right round to that the assimilated or artificial point it is creating as far as it is curving. So therefore, whenever our life becomes crooked, our character becomes crooked, it is turning around the particular center. If it is straightened, no boundary. It is naturally leading to the infinitum. The first time when I am reading it, I was in Nilambe. It was really shocking that how the way he is communicating this. So later I purchased book also, now I have my own personal copy. And later he has a number of books. He explained the when the boundary happens, when you are recognizing as the boundary, that boundary also imaginary thing. It is not really a concrete one. That boundary is the one going to give a certain amount of nature you are going to take maintenance, ultimately hell of a problem. If you are losing the boundary, it is given back to the nature, it is maintained by the universal law. So no problem. So that is what the arahant, or that is what the children, maybe that is what the mad people also. They are not worried about their boundary. Their eyes are not fixed to anything, it is waving. Well, these are some options we have to understand. But we are so much of proud to say, this is me, this is mine, this is my soul. So much so you are taking the pain of maintenance of it. So ecstasy you have to understand whenever you can have a unhindered, unbounded mind. Manasambhavi aparimana. You do develop your mind without limiting to certain area or time. Let the mind to dissolve, it is called oceanic. The term is called, known as oceanic. In Sinhala we call sililare. When the river go and dissolve into the ocean, it loses its identity. As far as it is going up to the river, it has the name. It has its, the fresh water. But when it go into the river, to a certain extent, it maintains the freshness. But once you go in, it becomes oceanic, no identity, that's all. So we have to dissolve into the humanity. Everyone is the same. Why should we have the sectarianism? Why should we have the my liking, my disliking, my patriotic feeling and all the kind of thing? All these things are making the cancers. So therefore ecstasy happens whenever you dissolve, that the Buddha says, whenever the mother develops the loving kindness to her child, it's unbounded. So exactly that you have to develop the loving kindness to all the beings, then you can have such a vastness, such a motherly mind, so that your capacity, your immunity, your tolerance increasing. There is no other technique or formula or anything like it. It's only the perspective, only the way you look at it. But our knowledge, the worldly knowledge, never allow us to do that. It always asking to confine. And so that we have to go against the grain. If you need ecstasy, if you need that unbounded or the total kind of oceanic feeling, to go in, never outside. Whenever you are going to do outside person, agent, or matter, or anything, you naturally become slave. When you go inwardly, that's called insight meditation, go inwardly, one day you may hit the target. Outwardly, no end. That is why the physics, as far as it is looking outwardly, is going for unending kind of a task. So the not only that you are going in, at least you have to go to outside. You have a fair amount of knowledge. The day you go, the trip start inwardly, slowly you come to know that some kind of a consistency is there, not otherwise. So it is called, inward trip is always known as spiritual, known as religious. It needs a certain amount of faith for you to go in, a certain amount of wisdom you have to go in. So that is the only compassionate thing you can do towards yourself. Only well-being you can think is to be with yourself, be here and be now.
But I have a question now. When the breath settles and when you don't have the feeling, when you lose the feeling, is that the area that you mean the gap, that you enter into the gap until you come back, until you get the breath back?
It is in a gap as far as the materiality is concerned. It's a gap as far as the feelings are concerned. It's a gap regarding the perception is concerned. It's a gap regarding the mental formations are concerned. It's a gap regarding the consciousness is concerned. So you can experience in all the five ways, not at one time. At a time you experience through what? One of the aggregates. But early parts, the mind itself is cheating. But if there it says not available, then you have to say, okay, never mind, you just wait and see. Again the breath can come. Again you can go to the very deep layer. Again the breath can come. Again you can go to the deep layer. Therefore, early reports telling that no breath itself is a mind game, maybe. So therefore, underestimate it. You just wait. And again the breath happens. So each time breath happens, it disappears into the deeper layers. And ultimately you go deeper, deeper and deeper. Ultimately, the forms, feelings, everything is lacking. I mean that no experience, no memory. It is like a black box. So that is what we have to say, the most spiritual moment. But there the mindfulness must be there in that. Not to fall into sleep. And not to question this, not to entertain doubts. Or not to go for forced breathing. Each and everything is you are questioning this and you are irritating this. You are not facilitating. So the facilitation never one can do when and where it happened for the first time. Each person in the first time is entertained doubts. But again and again listening, again and again go prepared, again and again doing it 1001 times only, one day you can go with full awareness and then the ecstasy happens. Due to your appreciation. Otherwise it is happening, but as far as you are not appreciating, no gain. Nothing you can experience in the positive. And the more subtle thing, we have to be careful, we have to be aware of it. When you go up to that level, you have to understand how much mental balance should be there. If someone is inferiority complex or superiority complex, what will happen? The madness will be double. Definitely, that is what happens in the if you don't have the moral integrity, and if you have no physical the strength, you can't tolerate it. The body is shivering because you are going to go to a different sphere, and if you have no due faith, no way. They will interpret it in a very, very destructive way. So all the other things must be very cooperative, and you must have the boldness. You must understand you are going against the grain, and it's a kind of a sacrification. Not with wish, not with the book knowledge. It's a direct touch. And once it happened, you are not the same person you are getting up. Your value system is definitely going to a different dimension. Even though it is not going to be a big outlook, your system, value system, liking and disliking, completely reshuffled. And when it happens again and again, it becomes slowly, slowly, slowly the evolution, kind of evolution going to take place. But for me, what I have understood, or what I have experienced was, many people have already experienced it. But no one is appreciating it. Everyone, simply I can say, everyone is a born arahant. No one appreciates. Everyone finds something to be discouraged, something to be criticized. They are always entertaining their own mistakes. They never entertain we are in the Buddha's era, we are in the human world, we have our faculties intact, we have good friends, we have good Dhamma, we are practicing. So Buddha says these are the most rare things. We are doing everything, but still we disqualify ourselves. We find we are not ready to see a reason to be glad under any circumstances. We try one or the other friction, one or the other black spots. Masters, so such a person can never see other person as pure. The way he criticizes himself, he finds each and everyone is dirty, everyone is cheating and kind of. So he is living in a cheating world. So Buddha says, ask to see the positive way, the productive way. That we are with all the people running, while running behind the sensuous pleasure, we try to, at least we are striving. We at least taking time. What a beautiful thing. It is not to earn money, not for gain, not for any fame. So we are hardly appreciating this kind of thing because of our result-oriented approach. We never appreciate the way. We never appreciated the lifestyle. We are waiting for something to happen, magic thing. Try to come and have a blessing for you, or everything, all of a sudden the ecstasy is going to happen. Magic.
Actually, though, I remember hearing to this in one of the talks. When you get to that point, and it's not great when coming out of the talks, and it's very relaxing, and you appreciate it very much. But that's not divine. But if you get attached to it too much, then you won't progress also, right?
This is the only point you can't get attached. That's nothing. That is why the Buddha is giving without the full prescription. That is something, there's no matter, no feeling, no perception, no volition involvement, no mind, consciousness. So therefore there's nothing that if something is there, you can get attached. This is something that for the first time, you see nothing. Relatively, Of course, relative. So this is something like you at the end of the diving board or the swimming pool. It is shaky. Now only you can put a somersault and jump it. But you are at the edge now. But still you are at the edge of the world, edge of the materiality. So daily when you go there, refinement happens. Daily refinement is very slow. So very, very slow because we are thinking in rational way. We are thinking more the materialistic way. They are very difficult to comprehend the progress. But our very ability to go into that again and again itself is unhuman. It is not a, it's not the fame gain and the money kind of thing. So you know there's an escape there. So you master it. When you are doing, so your whole effort is against the grain. Because other people are behind something. The money, fame, gain, or friendship, pleasure, whatever may be. But here, so therefore there's no problem of attachment over there. So if kind of attachment can happen, that can be appreciated. It's good attachment. Because it's attachment towards nothing.
Because it's healing the mind.
It is healing, not the mind or the body. But if such a person is living, the whole society is getting going to get the good vibration. Because he is setting an example away from the materialism, away from the consumerization, he earned the happiness. So all the other people are consumerizing. They are on the materiality. They are fighting each other, one-upmanship and tension. But here, that person is sitting in the middle, full happiness. Others are running right round, searching the happiness. More and more they run, they will be chased away from the center. And the world is not empty of that. There are some, all the time, there are some kind of people, they are well contented. They are contented here and now, not what is going to happen. Not going to search some more. Not going to experiment some more. See what is lacking here. What is lacking now. What is lacking in my humanity. Full-fledged. If you are looking from the lacking point of view, thousand and one thing that is coming at the materialistic list. But the spirituality-wise, we are endowed with, we are given with, so we never appreciate it. We are just like the donkey behind the carrot. We expect at the time we can get the carrot. So we are chasing behind. So ultimately the master's work is been done. You will be pulled the bait. Yeah, one book, when I go to the UK, one friend came and offered me, it is, the book is known as Enough. You must understand how to say enough. So we have been asked to not enough. We are always craving and crazy for all the kind. Instead, see the possibility to see enough. Or the Pollyanna says that you must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstance. So it is so much of reasons are there to be glad. So it's called glad game. You read Pollyanna? I gave all the children one copy, e-copy. And there's a very nice film also. I think that America is showing that film in each year. Because it's a very nice, very productive. It is not only for the children, even for the elders, it is very good. Written in very good English. You must learn how to say enough. Yes.
Mentioned something about a new book that I heard about, a new book called The Compass of Pleasure. It just came out and written by a member scientist.
What is the name of the author?
I don't know. I forgot the name. I would have heard, listened to it on the radio, NPR, National Public Radio. And he's a neuroscientist, and it's the way what he explains in the book, how the brain reacts as pleasure, how they perceive as pleasure certain things that we do, that consume, or, and then there are a few examples, like nicotine, marijuana, gambling. It doesn't have to be things that you consume internally, but things that give you, you know, that kind of And so I think it would be interesting to read, and then where all it says, another thing that also creates a pleasurable reaction is giving, like generosity also creates that same kind of reaction in the brain. And then he explains how, you know, what is what happens in the chemistry, I guess, in the brain. And then it's his advice to people how not to go towards one pleasure, you know, to create like habit or dependency or addiction.
Addiction.
And how to spread it out, including the practice of meditation. So it was very interesting. I just heard part of it.
So the one remark is most of such books are written in America now. America becoming leading in publishing these kind of books. Because that the neuroscientifical and the neuroplasticity, psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, and the physics, every frontline people, they are not hit with that. They know the pressure is something internal rather than external. And chasing behind the external arrangement is a futile. Instead, understand how the chemistry is working. So very nicely it has been presented. The one day, the Sigmund Freud, the Bertrand Russell, he has got a toothache and he has gone to the dentist. And it's a young girl. He asked, dear sir, where is the pain? And he has told, my daughter, my pain is definitely in the brain. But you better remove that bloody tooth. Everything is in the brain. Because inside the brain, there is a small man. He's representing it. And in the brain scientists came to know at the beginning, when specifically after the Second World War, people had a lot of brain damages. So they found where the point the eye faculty get damaged. And they found that particular place that is related with C. And some other places they found particular place damage, hearing damage, smelling, tasting kind of thing. Ultimately they mapped. Now they come to know not only one place, at least 14 places they have understood. So regarding hearing, regarding seeing, if something is damaged, other thing is making a deroots and kind of know. Now they are fully understood, and if that particular place is stimulated, he get vision. He can have a vision. And that is how now they put the completely the fMRI scanning, and they are doing experiment at a rate. But the Dalai Lama comes and says, and very, if you can read that destructive emotions, they are, it's a very voluminous thing. It says one of the American Lama, he can practice the complete concentration, concentrating upon the breath. Or he can be completely compassionate. We can analyze the rising and passing away of the insight meditation. We can do visualization. So he has been given the timetable and put into the scan, and then communicate is now for 1 minute you do compassionate, and then Davidson, Richard Davidson, he says, Bande, I can read you, I can see you how the brain waves is happening, and now it is time up, go for visualization, and then you can see the graph, and then you can go for insight meditation 1 minute. And after 6 minutes, he come and show the graphs. It is such a remarkable difference. Therefore, it says, train your mind and change your brain. If you can train your mind, whatever the original setup, you can change your brain. So that is why I am telling, sometimes people are joking with me. After a certain amount of meditation, each female become male. You don't feel, you don't consider as you as a male or female, you being as a person. So after a certain extent also, the woman fight, woman live, and all the kind of thing. After certainly you find, what is this? Why should we fight to fight against something? Because our basic nature is the same. So So that particular person has put into different tests and everything is remarkable. It's a given a very thundering sound after a remark and how the brain is going to work. And all the kind of thing, I find that tolerance level, once they develop, so they are least distant. And it has a measurable. It is, you can see in the machine itself. So there is no other thing, only the contemplation, only the meditation. So therefore it has become so. Specifically the John Kabat-Zinn, he is asked, giving his case in 4 years' time, or 5 years' time, mindfulness will be the best-selling medicine in the world. Because no side effects, no after effects. Healing all the medicine, all the every other medicine is now going to understand the iatrogenic effect. The side effects and after effects are so much complicating. And therefore, in the sometimes the whole hospital you have to close because there are some germs are going to overtake. You don't know how to combat it. Because germs are growing more faster than it. Within 3 days they are living and dying. The humans who develop one antibiotic take 15 years. So how you can overtake the germs? But the mindfulness is here and now, rejuvenating all the time, asking, giving the answer for everything. So therefore it will be there. So we have to teach our children, we have to teach our dear and near ones, mind your own business. That simple way of mindfulness, mind your own business. You are very worried about the dear and near ones and the society and blah, 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 your nation, your country and all the kind of things. But at the deathbed, what will come at your rescue? Nothing. So therefore, mindfulness, it's such a the lasting message for 2600. Still it is proliferating. Okay, so now it is 9:20. So today is our fourth day in the retreat. So far it went without any friction. So we must be thankful for all the people help organize this, seen and unseen everyone. So we'll share our merits with all the seen and unseen beings. And all our dear and near ones, as well as reminding and straightening of our objectives. With that idea, we will be chanting the traditional stanzas in order to share our merits, whatever we earn in these 4 days. Ittavata chanammehi sambetam punya sampadam sabbe devanumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. එත්තාවතා චගම්මේහි සම්බතම් පුඤ්ඤ සම්පතං සබ්බේ භූතානුමෝදන්තු එත්තාවතා චගම්මේහි සම්බතම් පුඤ්ඤ සම්පතං සබ්බේ සත්තානුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්칸තු සාසනං ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්칸තු දේශනං ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝ චිරං රක්칸තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්‍තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තිය සාදු සාදු සාදු